Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Prepping for Everything podcast with me, your host, Emily. I'm in a different location of the house today. This is my first time that I'm not recording in the cupboard, so I'm really hoping that you can hear me and everything goes well. Rosemary is sleeping in the bed, so I thought let's just take advantage of this nap time and get to recording. Today I wanted to talk about prepping for your pets. They're such a big, important part of our life, and I think it's often part that is overlooked when we're thinking about the realm of preparedness, because again, it can be overwhelming with not knowing where to start. Callie, I've mentioned in previous episodes, has been diagnosed with Addison's disease, so it's kind of like really ramped up preparedness in that part of our lives for her, because it really does make me think if for whatever reason we couldn't access her medication, what that would look like, and really just sitting and thinking about creating kind of a stockpile for her, because she needs to take 3 tablets every day for the rest of her life to manage this, to make sure that her hormones and her levels are all in check and that she's not going to go into adrenal crisis and crash or go into shock. So that's what we've been kind of tackling over here recently. And another thing that is going on over here in this neck of the woods are ticks. We're back into tick season, although this year, I don't know, did they even disappear? I don't know if it's because the climate was a little bit warmer this year, because normally over winter they kind of die off and then you see them begin to pick back up now. But the dogs, after their walks, had ticks in them in December and January, which is really, really quite uncommon. But they are back with vengeance. I found one in my bed the other day, and normally ticks don't freak me out so much. I think it's just because we grew up around it. I know that Lyme's disease can be really, really serious, but as long as you take precautions, you're typically okay. I was sharing on Instagram today all about ticks, and here are some facts that I've learned. This is UK specific. I don't know what it'll be like where you live, so maybe just go and check what the rates are in your area. But for the UK, it says that 2% to 10% of all ticks carry Lyme's disease. So how do we prevent that? I personally don't like using any chemicals and whatnot on the dogs when it can be avoided. I've been thinking about giving them a tick collar this year or one of those tablets. Normally, I can keep on top of the ticks, but I'm just struggling to keep on top of anything this year when I've got a baby as well. And where we live, it's a lot of moorland and they're in amongst the heather. And especially when you've got dogs like we do, they're not happy staying on the path. They like to be in amongst everything. And I just have a feeling they are going to be covered in ticks this year. So it's kind of trying to assess the risks and the benefits with these kind of flea and tick treatments. This, again, would be the first year that I'm doing it. But I really think with how prevalent ticks are becoming in the area, I am considering it. Up until now, I've only used like natural sprays on the dogs and on us. So before we go for a walk, I would spray them with some citronella spray, which helps deter ticks. Or for us, we would use a cedarwood oil. That's meant to be one of the best ones for repelling ticks as well. But again, we still get them too, but we just need to check ourselves over after every single walk. It's one of the main things that we do, tucking our trousers into our socks, just doing everything we can to prevent them being able to latch onto our skin. And if, God forbid, they do latch onto your skin, you just want to make sure that you're removing them as quickly and efficiently as possible. So when you go to remove the ticks, if you're not comfortable doing it, you might be best buying something called a tick twister or a tick remover. These are just little tools that go around the tick and you twist them. I can't remember if it's clockwise or anti-clockwise, the instructions would tell you. And it just makes sure that the tick comes off you or the dog in one piece, because you don't want to leave the head in. We have gotten so used to removing ticks now that we can get right down into them, but because they like grip your skin, basically. I know it sounds kind of horrible, but it can be really easy to break them apart, and then you only pull the body out and the tick head sort of stays in for, well, sometimes I found they stay in for a couple of weeks, and that's not good. You don't want that to happen. Another bit of information that I saw floating around the internet a few years ago was to smother ticks in like alcohol or Vaseline or something like that. I'm just here to tell you, please don't do that. That is terrible advice. What that essentially does is it suffocates the tick, but before the tick dies, it regurgitates and purges any of the bad stuff that's in them into your body or into your dog's body. And that's not good for your health. That is not good for your dog's health. And it can be avoided by simply removing the tick instead. We have had a few ticks in our lifetime. I think living in the countryside, it's hard to be avoided. I think we've become kind of desensitized to them in a way. Like, I don't know, they just don't bother me. But we've also never had Lyme's disease in our family, so maybe that's another reason why they're not bothering me as much. And lastly, while we are still on the topic of ticks, if you manage to catch a tick on your body, so just say it's latched onto you, I think you have about a 24-hour window. If you remove them, it really, really reduces the risk of, if that tick had Lyme's disease, then transmitting that onto you. You want to try and catch them as quickly as possible. And one of the things they tell you to look out for, you can go and search this online so you can really get an understanding of what I mean, but you're looking for like a red ring around a tick bite. If you see something that kind of looks like a red ring, then seek immediate medical treatment because that can indicate Lyme's disease. I hope this podcast doesn't sound too broken up. I'm sitting here and I'm literally just watching the baby monitor for any movement to see if Rosemary's going to wake up. So I'm going to crack on with this and see how much of a podcast we can get done before the baby wakes. Back to the overall plan for this podcast, and it really is preparing your pets for disasters. You can find a lot of information online about all of this. I really love, there's a website called ready.gov. I think it's an American website, or maybe it's just all of them because it's in loads of different languages here. And this is great. Like, they've got so many different ideas. They help you build a preparedness kit, financial preparedness, people with disabilities, older adults, caregivers, pets and animals, summer preparedness, winter preparedness, evacuation, shelter, safety skills. I mean, I'm not going to go through all this, but it's a really good starting point if you just want to touch base on any sort of preparedness topic. I like this. It just gives you some solid framework and you can decide from there where you want to go with it. So let's dive into their pets and animals section of this website. Again, I am kind of taking a lot of information from here. So if you want to go and check that out, I will leave it in the show notes below, the link to this website, and you can have a little look yourself. So the first thing, your pets are an important member of your family, so they need to be included in your family's emergency plan. To prepare for the unexpected, follow these tips with your pets in mind. Number one is make a plan. If you have a plan in place for your pets, you will likely encounter less difficulty, stress, and worry when you need to make a decision during an emergency. If local officials ask you to evacuate, that means your pet should evacuate too. If you leave your pets behind, they may end up lost, injured, or worse. I could not even imagine that. Like, our pets really are part of our family, and if anything was going on, you just want to make sure that they're included in your plans. Don't leave it until you're scrambling last minute to think, oh my goodness, what are we meant to do with these animals? I touched on this in the family preparedness planning episode, I think it was. If you're evacuating, think about where you're going to go with them, because a lot of places won't accept pets. If there's an area that you think you would be evacuating to, you're going to want to look for, you know, kennels or catteries or anywhere that you could stay. Or if you've got family or friends, try and plan in advance so that they could take you in an emergency. I think having just like little things in place like this could make such a difference for if anything went down. So things to include in your plan: know a safe place where you can take your pets before disasters and emergencies. Number two, develop a buddy system. Plan with neighbors, friends, or relatives to make sure that someone is available to care for or evacuate your pets if you are unable to do so. I'm going to take that one step further and say, even day to day, where we are moving, we're going to be like an hour and a half to 2 hours away from the closest city. So even if we need to go to the city for the day, I've never been someone that's going to leave the dogs at home all day. I don't like doing that. I just think that you should have a plan in place if you can. So having someone that can call in and look after your dogs, take them for a walk, let them out, just so that they're not stuck inside if they need the toilet. And if you're going to be late, if you get held up, if there's an accident on the road, is there someone that you can call that knows your animals that you trust to take out and just care for them for half an hour during the day? It's not always about the big disasters, the evacuations, the wildfires, the floods, the needing to leave your home straight away. It's about these day-to-day in-between things too. And Rosemary's eyes are open, so we're going to pause this here. I'll give you a quick ad break in the meantime, and then we'll get back to it afterwards. Hi listeners, are you ready to take your preparedness to the next level? My comprehensive online course is a great place to start. From food storage and preservation to water readiness and bag out bag checklists, I've got you covered. This is more than just presentation screens. I've also added downloadable worksheets, video tutorials, checklists, and loads of prepping content, which is consistently being added to as we generate new ideas. Not to mention, you get to take it in your own time to fit around your lifestyle, and you get lifetime access to the content. And here's the best part. As a valued listener of this show, you get an exclusive 10% discount with code POD10. That's POD10 to enter into the coupon code section at checkout. Don't miss out on this opportunity to level up your preparedness game. Visit the link in the show notes to enroll today, and together we can build a future where we are prepared for whatever life throws our way. I'll see you there. And we are back, just like that. She's down for her third nap of the day. Okay, so we covered making a plan, you know, having an evacuation plan, develop a system for someone to call in and check on your dog, or I say dog, I always refer to dogs because we have dogs, but whatever pet you have. And the next thing is have your pet microchipped and make sure that you keep your address and phone number up to date and include any contact information for emergency contact outside of your immediate area. That's really important. If your pet goes missing, we need to make sure that you can get reunited. There's no point in having old contact details on there. So that's your plan. Step two is build a kit for your pet. So just as you do with your family's emergency supply kit, a 72-hour kit, your bug out bags, whatever they are, think about the basics for survival, such as food and water. So you can have two kits if you want. You can have one larger one for if you're sheltering in place, if you need to stay in your house and you're doing so through an event that you can't really leave, like if you get snowed in, for example, and one lightweight version for if you need to evacuate. What will we keep in those kits? Here are some examples. Food in an airtight waterproof container. You never know what conditions you're going to be in. Water, and you would also probably want a water bowl. Maybe keep enough water for a couple of days worth of supply. Medicine is another big one, and you might want to keep an extra supply of the medicine your pet takes on a regular basis in a waterproof container. Number four is a first aid kit. You can talk to your vet about what's the best thing to put in for your pet's emergency medical needs, but you can also find a lot of information online, and it goes beyond just your first aid kit. If you've got the opportunity of doing like an animal first aid course, even if it's a crash course, even if you're reading a book, go and watch a YouTube video right now on like animal first aid. I mean, that's only going to take 10, 20 minutes out of your day, maybe even 30 minutes at a push. But this podcast is usually about 30 minutes. And I quite believe that anyone can fit this into their day somewhere that could save your pet's life down the road. You know, if you don't have immediate access to a vet, just knowing what to do is so important. I don't know if I mentioned on the podcast before, but I used to be a dog groomer and I had my own dog grooming business. And, you know, we took first aid courses before starting that, so we knew how to deal with situations. But I can still remember the first time a dog took a seizure with us, and I think it'll be ingrained in my memory forever. You know, you prepare so much for these things, but until they actually happen in real life, it's so different. And it was awful. But I know that when a dog has a seizure, it can look like they're dying. It was really, really traumatic, to be honest. But you just need to make sure that they're not going to hurt themselves and keep them calm, keep the lights calm. And that's about it. You just got to stay with them until they come back too. And most of them come back around within 5 minutes, 10 minutes. When I say come back around, I mean that they start responding to you again. When an animal's taking a seizure, it feels like the longest time ever. The actual active seizure is probably only lasting maybe a minute, 30 seconds. I don't know how long it was, but it felt like 10 minutes. It was awful. So just having the basic knowledge of knowing what to do in these instances can just go a long way. What else are you going to add in your pet emergency kit? So you're probably going to want a collar with an ID tag. I think that is compulsory in the UK to have ID tags on your dogs, and a harness or a leash. You might want to keep a backup leash and collar and ID just in case. You also are probably going to want to have copies of your pet's registration information or any other relevant documents in a waterproof container, and maybe available electronically as well, just in case you lose them or just in case something happens to them. This can be useful for if you need to prove their vaccination status or that they're yours. So number six, you might want to think about a traveling bag, crate, or sturdy carrier, ideally one for each pet. Do you have somewhere safe that you can keep them in if your world is in upheaval, that you're not needing to constantly worrying about your pet running away or getting out? You know, at least then you could just grab your cat, throw them in the carrier and leave, and they're safe, they're contained. And when we're talking about traveling too, do you have a vehicle big enough to keep all of your pets in if you did need to evacuate? And this is where it gets quite awkward for livestock. For us, any animals that we will be getting in the future as well, we will have a backup plan for those animals. And number seven, let's go back to their grooming needs. So you might want to bring pet shampoo, conditioner, or other items in case your pet needs some cleaning up if they've gone through something. Depending on what the situation is, they might need that. Obviously, it's not a massive necessity, but if you're thinking about any sort of long-term event, I don't want to go too doomsday on you all here, but do you know what your pet would need to stay healthy or hygienic? Because a lot of the dogs that we saw in the grooming salon were ridiculously matted. That's like when their coats really get compacted and knotted and it's really close to their skin, and it can actually cause sores, it can cut them, it can eventually cut off circulation and lead to limb loss. It's terrible. Matting's really bad. So if you ever see a dog that's really shaved short and the owner blames the groomer, it might more often than not be the owner, because the owner wasn't brushing their dog. There's a little bit of groomer talk for you. It's really important in that sense. It's not just about your dogs looking all pretty. It's humanity over vanity when it comes to situations like this. And if there was a long-term event where you couldn't access your pet groomers, do you have clippers at home that you could clip out these mats? Do you know anything about keeping your dogs well groomed for if you had to? Do you have brushes? Do you have these sort of things that you really need? And after that, is there sanitation needs? So if you were to evacuate, do you have a pet litter box or newspapers or paper towels or plastic trash bags or anything like that? If you're traveling with your pets and they don't have access to going outside, they're still going to need to go to the toilet. And we're almost done. You might want to bring their favorite toys or treats or bedding in your kit as well, as familiar items can help reduce stress for your pet. You can tell I'm really soft when it comes to our pets, and a lot of hardcore preppers won't agree with me. A lot of people will say eat your pets in an emergency situation, in a long-term situation, but I just do not see the need for that if you plan accordingly. Our pets are really part of our... they're a part of our family. And even if you go into the defense side of things, dogs are great in that sense. Dogs are going to alert you when people are there. Dogs can be your protectors if you need them to be your protectors as well. They have great uses. They're not just food if shit hits the fan, guys. So some familiar items for your pets can really help reduce their stress. I just think a bag of treats, if you're creating a kit anyway, that can go a really long way. And lastly, and this is quite an important one, is a picture of you and your pet together. If you become separated from your pet during an emergency, a picture of both of you will help document, one, your ownership, and two, it will help others assist you in finding your pet or identifying your pet. I think that's a really good one. And again, I've mentioned that before, in your family preparedness planning, you would probably do it for your kids. So why not just throw a picture of you and your pet in there too? So after all of this, another thing to think about might be stockpiling some food. I hate using the word stockpiling on here for some reason. I think it carries so many negative connotations and it just feeds into this typical generic prepper stereotype. But It's true. Like, food is so important, not just for us, but also for our dogs. So for Callie and Vigo individually, I try and keep 1 year's worth of their dry kibble dog food at all times. So how that works is you work out how much you go through. Just say you buy one bag of dog food. How long does that last them? Times that by the amount that you want to keep for them. For us, it's a year. So we need about 4 big bags at all times. And then you're just rotating through them. So when we will then go on to a fresh bag, I will order some more. So you've always got your stockpile, and it means that it's never going to waste because it's not going to expire. You're always working your way through it. And it just means that that's there for if anything goes wrong. Like, just recently, for the convenience aspects of things, Vigo is on like a lower fat diet. He's a miniature schnauzer. He's prone to pancreatitis and he's got a really sensitive belly. So he stays on this certain food, and I went to reorder some and it was out of stock. It's the first time it's been out of stock in, well, how old is he now? 3 years. And it just means that I've got another 3 bags that I can fall back on just now until it comes back into stock. Like, that's not a massive emergency situation, but if I didn't have those ones as a backup, I can guarantee I would have to put him onto a different dog food and his tummy would be so sore because he's a sensitive little Sally. Dog food doesn't store well. It's got a high sort of moisture, oil and fat content. So in long-term storage, it wouldn't do good in the likes of a Mylar bag. It would just go rancid. So this rotation system works really well for that. Another thing when we're on the food front is trying to keep the dogs used to human food. I say human food, but it's also just food. So in with their dog food, they always get meat, they get eggs, they get vegetables, they get different things that obviously isn't poisonous to them, just so that their tummies stay a bit more used to our food in the event that we couldn't access dog food. They're still eating scraps. And I mean, if you go way back when, dogs weren't getting kibble. I know it's complete now and everybody's got their own ideas on what dogs should be eating. Maybe they should be on a raw diet, whatever. I'm not here to argue about that. I just like to try and cover as many bases as I can in that sense. You could even go as far as printing off a list of foods that don't agree with dogs, you know, like chocolate and grapes and onions and all of these things, and have it on a list on the inside of your dog food cupboard. So, you know, if you can't access the internet, these are the foods that dogs aren't allowed. And the last thing that I can think of going into before we wrap up this podcast is training your animals. Samantha, my dog trainer, is going to be laughing and rolling her eyes while she listens to this. She listens to this podcast. I could do better. I will admit I could do better, but my pets aren't terrible. But if you train your animal, whether it be a dog, a cat, a goat, a horse, whatever it is, each animal needs to be well trained to be transported with a minimum amount of stress. You're wanting them to be familiarized with the crate, a pen, a carrier, a trailer, whatever it is. And then having basic commands like your sit, your stay, lie down. You can even bark train them. I mean, my dogs certainly know how to bark. Or bark on command. They're still not great at being silent on command, though. That is something that we would really, really need to work with in an emergency situation. I mean, it's great in the aspect of protecting the property. We're not going to have any intruders anytime soon without us knowing about it, but it's a nightmare when I'm trying to record a podcast and the postie comes to the door, or if a friend comes in and the dogs, they get a little bit excited, a little bit barky, but it's not the end of the world. Notice how I'm already trying to make excuses for them for the lack of work that I am putting in. Callie works and works and works, and I really wish when she was younger that we trained that and put it to good use, because I think Callie would be amazing for search and rescue. Like, she absolutely adores it. We always play this game with her tennis ball. It's called Find It, and we literally drag the ball around the house and hide it in different locations, or we can take it outside and do the same outside, and then she'll need to sit and stay while we're doing that, and she can't see where this ball is hidden, but then we go find it and she runs, and their sense of smell is just amazing. She follows from how you rub this ball across the floor or up onto a bench or a chair or wherever it is, she follows the scent exactly and finds this tennis ball. It's incredible. What they're capable of is so incredible, and it could be attuned to so much more than what I'm doing with it. And just what popped into my head there too, when we're talking about training dogs, is you can help train them to be around loud noises and things that would typically cause stress in them. The likes of firework night. I think a lot of pet owners hate fireworks. Bonfire night, anything like that that's happening, New Year's, whatever it is, it can cause so much anxiety and unnecessary stress in our pets, and it's horrible to see. But trying to train this out of them at a young age can be really beneficial, or getting them used to it around the house, not chasing them with the Hoover or the hairdryer and causing that sort of angst in them. I was about to say just being a responsible pet owner, but a lot of people don't know until you know. In any situation where you're unsure what to do with your pets, or you think they need more work, I would always reach out to a behaviorist. I'm in quite a few training pages on Facebook, and the amount of dangerous and just really poor advice that gets put out by people that don't know is not worth it. Like, if you have a little bit of extra cash that you can put to good use for improving your life and your animal's life, I would reach out to a behaviorist with anything that's going on. Again, Samantha, don't be rolling your eyes at me. I'll get back to dog training soon, okay? Anyway, is that my cue to wrap up this podcast? Perhaps it is. Next week, I am going to take an episode fully on listener questions. So if you have a question, please send it to preppingforeverything@gmail.com or message me on Instagram. Thank you once again for supporting the show. I appreciate so much every one of you that leaves a review, that listens, that shares it on your social media or shares it with a friend. It is just doing wonders behind the scenes, because every week we are reaching more and more people, and it's lovely. It makes sitting in this little cupboard recording all worth it. I hope you have a great day, and I will speak to you again next Wednesday.